No one should be surprised to hear that low-income urban areas have gang problems. They might not be reported enough, but gang-related crimes are visible on the streets. What might be surprising to some is where gangs start. Not in the streets, but in the schools. In our first story today, Molly Roberts looks at the role high schools are playing in helping, rather than hindering, gang activity.
A local high school teacher describes the murder of one of her students.
His name's Francisco Rodriguez, and the reason I'm saying his name is because he's dead. He died this past summer. He was shot to death by a 14-year-old Sureño in front of his apartment.
Police officer Todd Hurst fills me in on the background.
Well, it started off in the beginning of summer, where we started having an insurgent or an uprise of gang violence in Redwood City as well as throughout the county of San Mateo. Redwood City specifically had two gang-related homicides. The county was having shootings, and throughout the entire county there was homicides.
Francisco was standing in front of his apartment, probably wearing red, the color of his gang. A 14-year-old member of the opposing gang jumped out of a nearby car, spotting the rival gang color.
Dicks came out from both sides saying, if you're going to shoot somebody, you get out of the car, you look them in the eye and shoot them. Well, the last shootings that we started having in Redwood City were very specific and very much like that.
Francisco hasn't been the only recent victim of gang violence in the area. 15 gang-related homicides occurred last year in East Palo Alto. Most recently, Officer Richard May was killed this January by East Palo Alto gang member Alberto Alvarez. The city has poured more money into catching gang members and putting them in prison. Officer Hurst.
If a kid has made the choice to get into a fight over a color, to get into a fight because of where they live, and not like someone because where they live, you know, that needs a little bit more power behind it.
Gang membership is a complex issue. Single-parent families, bad influences by the media, peer pressure, and poor households are only a few characteristics that have been shown to be related to kids joining gangs. But I decide to follow Francisco's probable path through the place society interacts most with gang members, but gang experts study the least. The school system. When did Francisco the high schooler, the middle schooler, the elementary schooler, become Francisco the gang member?
Yo, D, what? Come on, what?
Give me the fortune, keep the fame, said my man Lewis. I agreed, know what you mean, because we live the truest lie. I asked him why we...
The classroom in high school is actually a breeding ground for gangs. You know, gangs don't really recruit on the street. It isn't until they're 16 or 17 that they start dropping out, and then they become full-time gangsters. But it starts in high school.
I meet with Francisco's mentor and friend, a teacher from East Palo Alto. Let's call her Stacy. Stacy prefers to remain anonymous on the off chance my essay could threaten the trust she's built with her students, many of whom are gang members. She keeps looking around while I'm interviewing her, anxious one of her students will show up and their trust with her will be broken.
It's a really weird dynamic for me as a white, you know, woman to be now really pretty deeply involved with both sides of the gangs, and I'm an insider, basically, because I'm not a policeman, I'm not a probation officer, and even though I am an authority figure, I'm someone that they look at as that can be trusted.
Stacy teaches lower-level classes at a high school in East Palo Alto where gang violence runs rampant. Evidence shows that while gang fights and gang-related crimes occur outside of school, most are planned at school. Stacy says 70% of her kids have gang associations, and up to 10% are full-time gang members. Gang divisions in San Mateo reflect gangs in the prison system where they divide along ethnic lines. Since the Bay Area has a large Latino population, most have ethnically Latino members. Latino gangs are divided into two main groupings in California, the Norteños, or Northern California Latinos, and the Sureños, or Southern California Latinos. Norteños wear red and tag or graffiti the number 14, while Sureños wear blue and tag 13. Both have subgroups depending on the neighborhood the gang member is from.
And they would either only use red pens, they might bring a red bandana, and they definitely tagged, you know, Norte and XIV and stuff like that.
Francisco was part of LMG, or Little Mexican Gangsters, a Norteño gang in Redwood City. Before dropping out, he might have hung out on the Norteño side of campus, wore red shoelaces, and written in red pen. He probably also went to class with fellow gang members.
It actually works out. I have never had two kids be of different, you know, a red and a blue. I've never had a red and a blue in the same class.
Really?
And it's because all of the Sureños are in ESL classes. The Norteños are in the SEDAI classes, which are the step before you become mainstreamed. And then all of the regular classes, all the whites and everybody else, are in those classes.
65% of Latino kids in the Bay Area perform well below grade level academically. Schools in San Mateo ability track kids or put kids in classes based on test scores and behavior. This often leads to classes segregated by ethnicity, with a large number of Latino students in remedial classes.
It's so bad that even, especially for the Sureños at my school, if they're in the class with the Sureños, then they start getting called Sureños, they start getting picked on. The Norteños will say, what do you claim, what do you claim? And these immigrants will be like, you know, nothing, I'm nothing, I'm nothing. But after a while of being picked on or maybe even being jumped or being bullied, they eventually decide, well, why not? Because if I do claim, then at least I have this whole group of people that are going to have my back. That's the mentality. You rockin' loud, but you ain't saying nothing.
Time I settle the score. Francisco was ability tracked into lower level classes, and chances are Norteños recruited him while he was sitting in math class. Surprised that gang recruitment occurs in lower level classrooms, I decide to look into the process of ability tracking. I talked to retired Stanford professor Sandy Dornbush, who hasn't studied gangs but is famous for his studies on ability tracking.
We have a lot of tracking in schools in which you are putting the worst students together and the best students together. The best students are helped a little bit, and the worst students are hurt a lot. Accordingly, these kids are in classes where learning everything still isn't very much, so that their future is blocked. Future in terms of the courses they can take, the schools they can go to, the kinds of professions they could occupy.
Dornbush says he can see how this makes gang recruitment easier.
If these kids don't have alternatives, and if they're attracted to the low group, and if they're going to have much more contact with people who are poor, which is often the case, who are minorities, which is often the case, there's going to be a kind of we feeling that makes recruitment easier, and a lack of contact with people in the wider society, which would make it easier for them to leave and move into more, what should I say, supportive environments that are likely to produce good results for them in the future.
Once recruited into a gang, it's easy to imagine that Francisco's life in school was close to ending. School police officer Todd Hurst relates school policy towards gang members.
You know, if you're going to act like a gang member, dress like a gang member, talk like a gang member, associate with gang members here at Sequoia High School, we're not going to want you. The school's not going to want you. The school has a very strong policy on that.
After being expelled from school, many students choose simply not to enroll in another school and slip between the cracks of the public school system. Latino student dropout rates in San Mateo County are close to 40%, and many more are not reported. Recruited in the classroom around his freshman year, we can imagine that by the time Francisco was 16 or 17, he dropped out to become a full-time gang member. But high school wasn't the first time Francisco heard about gangs. We'll trace his path through middle school.
By middle school, I mean, that's when they really start to make their delineation, those who are kind of, they get obsessed with the gang culture, the writing, the clothing, the language, the tagging. They write, they all assume nicknames, street names. So that all starts to happen before they actually get into a gang. I mean, and pretty much once that starts to happen, it's happened, yeah.
Alejandro Vilches has been working in gang prevention for over a decade and now works with gangs at Peninsula Conflict Resolution Center in San Mateo. Vilches knows gangs not only by working with them, but through his own school experience. Vilches agrees that gang membership isn't just high school peer pressure. Francisco probably looked for his identity in gangs starting as early as middle school.
I'll be straight up with you. I was the biggest wannabe there ever was. I never shot anybody and never, well, I won't go into what else, what I didn't do or what I did. The main reason why people get into something is for identity and acceptance. Nobody gets into a gang to say, well, I'm going to be a killer. They get into it, they get jumped in because they want to be a part of something. That's the main reason.
I generally worked with kids that it seemed nobody else wanted to work with, which were usually the worst behavior cases, the worst attendance cases. Literally students who, I had a vice principal once ask me why I was bothering, you know, working with this one student.
Experts studying gangs in Los Angeles have shown that middle school problems usually predate involvement with a gang. Gang members usually have worse self-concepts than those uninvolved in gangs. Francisco might have acted up in middle school, smoked weed, and picked fights in the halls. Teachers may have sent him to the principal's office or pushed him to the side.
Outworking of pushing some kid to the side because he's unruly and he's not acting like the other 15 kids should, you know, are, then that one kid will do two things. One, I'm going to show you how, you think I'm unruly? I'm going to show you how unruly I could be instead of working with me. And two, I'm not going to let you know that I feel isolated, but I do feel isolated, and since I don't want to feel isolated, I'm going to go hook up with kids who might be experiencing the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's from experience and also from what I've seen in the schools.
Talking to Sandy Dornbush, I pieced together that Francisco's behavior problems, coupled with his 8th grade test scores, probably ability tracked him into the high school classroom the gangs recruited him in. Dornbush's studies show ability tracking is based on behavior of the student and a test he takes in 8th grade.
So that if you had to say, what is the single best predictor? It's the 8th grade math test score. Do the kids know that it's important? Do their parents know that it matters? Do they even know when it's being given? No. That is it. Mm-hmm. Now, once you're in, seldom do you get moved.
Schools often make errors ability tracking kids, and once kids get tracked, there's little chance of them getting out. Dornbush describes a nearby Redwood City high school.
By putting them so far behind in math, it was impossible for them to fulfill the requirements of the state college system or the University of California system, and therefore there's no 4-year public school that they could get into in the state of California. And they didn't know this. And sadly, when asked by the guy with me, Gardner, they really wanted to be doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, you know, just the usual kinds of things, engineers. They had all sorts of aspirations and didn't know. They didn't know.
It's easy to imagine that Francisco had behavior problems in middle school, so he was tracked into lower-level classes in both middle and high school. Lower-level classes are often taught by uncredentialed classroom aides and often neglected by the school system. These classes were not only the place gangs recruited Francisco, but also cut off his options for the future.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you.
But Francisco's middle school problems had to have started somewhere. For Francisco and other gang members like him, Stacy says she can point out future gang members in their elementary school classes.
You can pinpoint them. I pinpointed them in third grade. I found out recently my third graders are now juniors, sophomores. They're sophomores. And I found out that the one for sure is a gang member.
Sandy Dornbush stresses the importance of reading in keeping kids out of lower level classes.
The big problem most of these kids have is they can hardly read. And that's because they give up. After about third grade, nobody spends any time trying to teach them to read.
When these kids fail in school year after year, they reject the school system as the key to their future.
Kids that haven't been doing well in elementary school their whole life, middle school, they get to high school, they finally say, you know, this is stupid. I'm stupid. You know, I'm never going to be able to do this.
Researchers have shown that poor academic performance is a predictor of gang violence. Recently, a study in Seattle followed kids from 5th to 12th grade to see what characteristics were most frequent in gang members. A learning disability and low academic achievement were two of the top predictors of gang membership. These kids were 3 times more likely to join a gang. Kids in East Palo Alto often come from geographically and linguistically isolated communities. Kindergarten may be one of the first times some kids encounter English. As a result, teachers become accustomed to thinking Latinos just can't do as well. Dornbush's research has shown that teachers are more likely to be warm with minority kids and that few teachers are demanding with minority kids.
In general, the best kind of parents are warm and demanding. The best kind of bosses are warm and demanding. The best kind of teachers are warm and demanding. And it's one of the sad things for the kids at the bottom that people give up on being demanding.
Francisco enters elementary school new to English. By third grade, he's only learned the alphabet. Frustrated teachers with limited resources demand less of him, forget about him, and his education begins to slip through the cracks of the school system. By middle school, he's been told he's failing and starts acting up. He fails the 8th grade exam he doesn't know he's taking and gets tracked into a lower level high school class where teachers expect very little, and he joins a gang for identity and protection. The school expels him, and the next thing you know, he's in front of his apartment wearing red. As Stacy says, schools aren't doing enough.
I'm disappointed with my school's lack of proactive intervention with the gang members, but there's such a small population of the large. There's such a small population, and it's so easy to kick them out that I really feel like, you know, prevention isn't really on the top of their list.
Ability tracking is here to stay, but giving up on kids in lower level classes and not allowing them to progress is unforgivable.
What we need is short-term remediation. Short-term in the sense that the kids must be caught early, and effort and money should be put into helping them to catch up so that if a kid is having trouble learning to read, there'll be somebody working with that kid an hour or two every day in third grade. Not that this is a kid who comes into high school hardly able to read, and so he can't do the assignment.
But instead, we wait until high school, where we set low expectations for lower-level students, and discipline those who don't fit in by expelling them from school to the streets where they shoot and are shot at.
A lot of immigrant children, not just Latinos, a lot of immigrant children become marginalized, and the clashes in the values of home and the values of the street or the school clash, and the young people are crying out, trying to figure out, who am I? What's that identity? Where am I accepted? And so I start hooking up with other dudes or homegirls that have the same experience, and all of us, and then slap a label on me, and we become a gang.
Again, gang membership is a complex issue. But if we can pinpoint kids who are at risk to join a gang in third grade, and we have 8 more years before they can drop out of the school system, we have time for prevention. Allocating resources to lower level classes and making sure the system incorporates kids from disadvantaged backgrounds will not only keep kids out of gangs, but will also leave them with the ability to pursue their dreams.
Molly Roberts is a senior at Stanford. This is the Stanford Storytelling Project.